If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make, every vow you break.
I need names. People working in the CIA.
Every smile you fake, every claim you stick.
I've got him.
Wait. They should grab her, set up a roadblock, pull her over before it's too late.
Well, here we are, West Coast Project, podcast for the Americans. My name is Mike.
And my name is Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
We're a little late this week, so sorry, everyone. We had a busy week podcasting with new friends and juggling schedules and all that. So here we are on the weekend.
Yep. Sorry, right. Guys.
No need to be sorry. 312, I am Abazin Zadran. What did you think, Jamie? How'd you like this episode?
I really liked it, and for some really good reasons that we can talk about, because I don't know, I have forgotten to tell you that I have some secret skills, and the secret skills I have informed my enjoyment of this episode, so I'll tell you about them.
Okay. I really like the Russian Moscow, the scenes in the Moscow office, the center, I guess they call it. Is it the center or the residenture is the office in the U.S., right?
Right.
What do they call that damn thing in Moscow?
The center.
That's the center. Okay. Mm-hmm. I like those scenes with Arkady.
Wait, Arkady's here, though.
No. Isn't Arkady and Oleg and Tatiana, aren't they in Russia?
I think they're supposed to be here, but where they are looks like Russia. It's weird. But I think they're here because...
You know what? You're right. Yeah, it just seems so Russian-y.
It does. And it wasn't like that last season, but this season it seems so Russia-y.
They got all the ladies with the typewriters clacking away. That's all in Washington, huh?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, you're right. That's dumb. All right, what I liked those scenes, and I thought I liked them for a real specific reason. Like, I was just kind of rewatching, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's meaningful. And then I was, like, kind of dozing off, so I didn't write it down. And later on, I'm like, oh, what was that great thought I had? I tried to recapture it, and I never quite got to it, but I'm near it. So maybe you can help me find it again when we get to that part.
All right,
so it starts out with Elizabeth at the Clayton Hotel as the phone girl. She's a good-looking phone girl. She looks pretty convincing in that outfit.
I agree. She looked very much like a worker.
Authoritative. She was confident, and she walked right through everything to get to where she had to go.
Yep.
And so with Philip's help, she connects the basement switchboard to the room that Abazin is going to be in, and they find the connection out of all the different terminals. They link the right one up so they can use it later.
Right.
Pretty cool. Pretty interesting.
Very cool. I loved how they did it, you know, with the line about the pillows and, you know, you can find them in the closet. It's, you know, it was perfect. And I was thinking the whole time, like, it's really cool the way they say it, because it's just enough information to confirm that it's definitely who they're supposed to be talking to. And it's coded enough that they know they're talking to each other and everything's clear, but nobody else could ever figure out.
Yeah, just in case the room's bugged, that there's, you know, there's no connection to them or anything. Really brilliant. Right.
Yeah.
Joel Fields probably had some background you could tap into by using that in order to use that.
I'm sure.
Dialogue. So they go home and they find a note from Paige that she's left and she's at the church doing something and she's going to be spending the night at Pastor Tim's.
Yep.
Not cool.
No.
Not cool. So they have to go out to get her, but they leave Henry behind. And Jamie, Henry's watching the MASH final episode.
Is that what he was watching?
Yeah. Did you ever, were you into MASH ever way back?
Okay, so like I was really young when that happened.
Of course, of course.
But I really was. But yes, I remember watching the finale.
That was a 2.5 hour episode.
Yeah, it was good.
It was watched by 125 million viewers.
Yeah, I remember that being like a huge deal.
It was a 60 rating and a 77 share. It was like the hugest show ever. That'll never happen again. TV's too fragmented nowadays, but it was the most highly rated single television episode. I don't know if it still is. It must be, because there's no way that any other episode could ever attract that many viewers.
I don't think it is, actually. I think that some other TV series finales, in fact, in recent years, have beat it. And I think Lost was one of them.
That could be, I guess. Lost or Dallas or something.
Something.
Yeah. Well, that was February 28th, 1983, so that's easy to timestamp this one. It's exactly that day. We know that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they fade out and go to the first credits. We come back at Pastor Tim's outside, and both of them are sitting there waiting in the car, both of the Jennings. And Elizabeth makes fun of the thing Paige is going to be doing that night or that day, that next day, whatever, some potluck poster-making sing-along.
I know. I loved it. It was so funny. And it made you realize, like, I mean, that one, I loved that scene. Because it really felt like you were peeking inside the car, like you were overhearing stuff you shouldn't overhear, like they wouldn't want you to hear that whole conversation.
Yep, it was good.
Yeah.
Philip warns her not to jump all over Paige. And Jamie, I thought they were on the upswing, but they're still very stressed, Philip and Elizabeth, between one another.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, they should be. I mean, Elizabeth, I have to say, this season, she's really got my sympathies. I think it's because she's going through some of the things that women really do go through, you know, relationship stuff and kid raising stuff and, you know, and all that. It just, I can see she's kind of on the verge of cracking there, you know, and when you think about it and what happens later, like in the next, like, scene or two on, you can understand why. You know, why she would be snapping and why she would be stressed. It's just bad.
So dopey Pastor Tim and his wife drive up with Paige, and he just apologizes left and right for not knowing anything. That guy's such a dingus, man. And his wife is homely.
What the fuck is wrong with you, Mike?
I don't know. I have nothing good to say about that guy.
I don't like him either, but you don't have to pick on his homely wife.
They make small talk about Kenya, and they yank Paige out of the pastorally clutches and drive her back home. She tries her damnedest to stay with the plan. Got her homework done, everything's packed, Art's already in the house, but they don't put up for it.
I feel so sorry for Paige. She's so sad. I mean, she just wants to get away and get some normalcy for like a minute, and she can't.
So when they get back, Elizabeth and Philip give her the garage talk. It's starting to be that the cone of silence, like the FBI office has the sterile room. They have their own sterile garage room.
Right?
And they stop her shit right in her tracks, literally blocking her way from walking past them into the house.
Yeah, it was such a teenager versus parents moment.
Then on top of that, Elizabeth reminds Philip that he has Martha duty that night.
And that's where I was like, oh, dude, Elizabeth, because she's got this crap to deal with Paige, and she's got to go in the house and deal with Paige's attitude and potential outbursts and not knowing what the heck is going on. And then, like, somebody whose husband has, you know, a meeting that he's got to go to after getting off work, she's like, oh, you have to go to Martha's. And then you see her actually roll her eyes. Like, she actually rolls her eyes and then turns around and goes into the house. It's just terrible.
Yeah, some meeting. So at that meeting, Hans warns him off. Hans has really upped his game. He's kind of won his way back into the spy superstardom here.
Yeah, okay, yeah, the murderer Hans.
Hey, Jamie, did you notice, I forgot this in the last episode, our last podcast, but did you notice that when the hotel guy and Elizabeth were in the computer room and he had to go to the counter because of a distraction, that Hans was the distraction?
No, I didn't notice that.
Hans was the angry customer who needed to talk to the manager. That's why that manager left the room.
I didn't see who it was on camera, and I just assumed it was Philip.
No, but it was Hans in a disguise. He was wearing like a dark wig of some. He looked a little different, but you could tell it was him. I went back and looked and checked.
Oh, wow, that's wild.
Pretty smart, because Hans could just keep arguing, right? It wasn't just a casual, you know, reason that the guy left. Hans could say, but I'm really upset, you need to talk to me more longer, and but that was all behind the interruption that manager had to deal with.
Yeah, talk to me now or I'll shoot you in the eye and choke you out.
Yep. So the reason Hans warns Philip off is, or Clark slash Philip, is Martha's hosting Stan for some tea. Stan has dropped in, surprising Martha with a visit.
I was flipping out in this scene because, you know, it started with Martha talking, chit-chatty-chat-chat, and I thought it was Philip, and everybody thought it was Philip Clark, and she turns around and it's Stan, and I was like, oh, holy crap, because I was thinking, Philip's going to come walking through that door any moment, you know, because I didn't know that when he saw, at that point, he hadn't been warned off yet, right? We just saw Martha, and we assume she's talking to Philip, that he's arrived and he's in the house, in the apartment, and she's talking to him. But then we realize she's talking to Stan, and yeah, that's why I flipped out, because I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I can't remember which we saw first. Hans driving by with the nod of the head and the hat coming off, or the, you know, the warning clue, or the actual talk to Stan.
Did you think it was a warning clue? What did you think it was?
Yeah, it was a warning. It was Hans warning Philip, don't go in there.
No, I know later we find out that, but like at the time, I thought he was giving him the all clear. I thought it was
It was some kind of signal. Right. It could have been the all clear, because it was like a, it wasn't like a, you know, frantic look like cutting the throat ixnay on the visit A. It was like a approval or a nod or something.
Right.
Yeah, it was hard to tell what the signal meant, but it was definitely a clear signal.
Yeah.
So Stan's on to her, Jamie. He's on to Martha. She's done. You know, she's done for now. You know that right now, right? You get that, right?
Are you trying to say my Martha's on her way out?
Yeah.
I don't know, because, I mean, come on. Like the end of the episode, Mike.
They've made her a good liar, and they have us wondering if she can make it, but she's done.
I don't know.
Stan's in there talking to her, and he's making a little small talk, and he notices the Shogun novel, and she asks him what he's doing there. She's like, all right, dude, get to the point. What do you want?
Yeah, she was kind of rude.
Yeah. She was trying to almost deflect it, like with marriage. You know, are you here because of your marriage and you're breaking up? But that's just a feint, right? That's a protection.
Yeah, she knows he's on to her.
Yeah, she throws him out and calls him Agent Beeman.
Yeah.
And then Clark's photo was in the silverware drawer. How did she know? She stuffed that photo away before Stan got into the room.
Yeah, I guess so.
There's a couple points in this episode where we realize that if they only had taken pictures or had some video, that this jig would be up.
Right.
Like Philip coming to the FBI guard outside the Abazine's door and just saying, hey, I'm here to take him in for a minute. They just take a picture of him and show it around, you know, later.
Mm-hmm.
They would have had him. They would have caught him. But no video, no pictures in those days.
The 80s.
So because Philip Clark doesn't go in to see Martha, he comes home early and surprises Elizabeth.
Right.
Jamie, yeah. Was she getting ready for some kind of date or something? She looked pretty she looked pretty fancy. I mean, she looked pretty surprised he was home.
These are her PJs.
I know. I'm just being a little fantastical here.
No, I mean, they were pretty pajamas, but they were still PJs.
I think it was like her lingerie, almost like her underwear.
Okay, so she's worn that before, though.
Has she?
Yeah, she's worn that before. She's worn that, and then, like, that's why in that episode where I was so corny and I thought that they were, like, having a Valentine's episode, like a really perverse Valentine's episode where they were hugging each other and they looked like a heart. One of the reasons I thought that is because she was wearing a pink T-shirt, which she never wears. She's always wearing something that makes her look slightly dangerous and a little exotic, you know?
Yeah. Well,
you know, so it wasn't really her style. And so, yeah, that's one of the things.
Well, of course, I'm kidding about her going on a date. They would never, I don't think these two would ever cheat on each other. They have too many extracurricular activities as it is to want more. And plus, it doesn't seem to be their function, right? They're there to do business.
Yeah, no, I don't think that. I mean, it's odd. It's funny though that you say that, because in the beginning of the season, I speculated that maybe Elizabeth might get into something with Hans.
It looked like that, like he's the young stud working with her.
Yeah,
he wanted that, but I don't know if she ever did.
Oh, I know she didn't, because she was really adamant about it with him and kind of said, remember, she said, I'm with someone and I can't mess it up.
Yeah, she makes it pretty clear.
Yeah.
So Philip kind of recognizes Hans doing good, and Elizabeth asks, what now? And Philip just says, well, I don't know. We go to another commercial. It's a pretty tough spot that they're in now. Martha's on the freaky edge. Paige is on the freaky edge. They've got a big mission to pull off here at the hotel. They don't like Gabriel much anymore. Her mom's dying. I mean, it's all coming to a boil.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to mention that to you because, you know, we were all freaking out last time about the honey trap, and we were trying to figure out why she was having all these staring into the sky or into the horizon moments. I think that she's just really super stressed out because her mother's dying and Paige knows and all this other stuff is going on, and Martha and, you know, and possible Stan and, you know, all this other intrigue and, you know, frightening stuff. I think she's just kind of on the edge.
Yeah. Well, we come back from that commercial and Hans picks up Martha off the street. Wordlessly, Jamie, with the door flipped open, the universal sign for get in, baby.
Yeah.
Like Mike Ehrmantraut with the hand open for the car keys.
Yes, the universal sign for hand me the keys.
And then we go see Lisa and Maurice. Now, I read a review on. I love this. I love Alan Sepinwall, and I read his website for a bunch of shows. Hitfix is his website, and he calls Maurice Marcus. And then everybody in the comments called him Marcus. And I took my ass back to IMDb to look up Marcus now. I figured if we got Linda Lisa wrong, maybe we got Maurice wrong. But it is Maurice. It is Maurice. But she goes back and she's helping Lisa with this spy process. She's going to take some pictures with a purse camera, hidden purse camera. And Maurice is scrutinizing the spy process, Jamie, with his savvy drunk eyes. He's got a little bit to say about every little step along the way, right? You gonna be okay? That guy just doesn't know when to shut the hell up and let the people who know what they're doing do what they're doing.
I have never heard those two words put together at the same time.
Yeah, I may have never put them together myself before. But that was what it was, right? He's an amateur trying to act like a hard ass who knows everything, and he's butting in. He butts in at the end. Jesus.
What did you call him last episode? A hard ass who's a dumbass.
Yeah. There's a lot of those in the world, so that observation was pretty easy. The dumbass, hard ass. They go together.
I just cannot wait for his body to be discovered.
His comeuppance, yeah. He makes poor Lisa, the girl he's with, worry left and right, while Michelle encourages her. You know, Michelle, of course, slash Elizabeth, encourages her and calms her down and gives her confidence. And then he even tries to nix the sedative. We ain't taking that.
With his alcoholic self.
Right.
He's worried about her taking a 5 milligram sedative so she can go and steal photographs that they're waiting for in Russia. Come on.
And he's on a 24-hour sedative, probably, with his alcohol.
A big old jar.
So I thought it was cool how Michelle powered her through this and got her calmly past Maurice's obstacle traps that he kept dropping.
I gotta put it out there. If the people connected to the series, any of the writers or any of you guys connected to the Americans listens to this podcast, would you please let us know what was in the jar? We really want to know.
It's probably some kind of formaldehyde. You know, it was a poor substitute for alcohol. It wasn't like, you know, 40-year-old bourbon from Kentucky or something.
Not that cloudy white mixture.
Yeah, it's paint thinner. Nail polish remover.
Oh, God.
All right, well, Hans drops Martha off at that shitty tunnel. That's the shitty tunnel with the shitty bench in it, I thought, right? Or is that just another tunnel?
No, I think it was just another one.
Remember that tunnel that had a bench in the middle of it?
I do. Yeah, that was the one, the saddest park bench in the history of park. That's
right.
The
one. I would walk in from a brilliant sunny day and into a gloomy tunnel and sit on the bench. I don't get it. But Clark is waiting there. Of course, Philip/Clark is waiting there for Martha, and he wants to move Martha. No, 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 Jamie. She's not going to be moved. It's liquidation time, man. Martha is just smart enough to get herself bumped off.
Would you stop it?
I'm getting a lot of mileage out of the Martha being bumped off, so I don't mind now that it's taken four episodes too long, but...
She's not, I'm telling you, just based on the last scene, come on, he's going to do what he can to save her, he's not going to kill her.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're on the island by yourself there. We need to maybe get the robot back for the final episode next week so he can be on your team, if she lives long enough.
Would you stop it? She has to live to the next episode.
All right, back at the FBI, Adderholt now has grown some balls. He's grilling Stan. He knows about him and Nina. He asks him if he planted the bug. He's got some cojones asking Stan this stuff directly.
I tell you what, I loved that scene. I loved that scene so much because, you know, we haven't seen too much of Stan this season. Like, Stan's, like, awesome, hard side. And, boy, he sure let it all out when Adderholt questioned him.
Stan knows it all, man. Stan's got every angle and corner covered. The woman he shot who got away might be the one who kicked your ass along with Agent Gadd, you pussy. Might be the killer of Chris Amador. He shuts Adderholt right down. I love that.
I loved it so much. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, he really let him have it. And it was so cool because it was one of those like super fast streams of just like stuff you never expected to come out of his mouth. And then just boom. And Adderholt just standing there like, what the heck just happened? His hair blown back.
Of course, the only thing Stan doesn't know is the Jennings are right under his nose.
Yeah, oh, which just makes, like, everything seem completely opposite.
So this is where I had my epiphany moment that I couldn't grasp. Jamie, maybe you could help me. I think these two scenes need to be connected. The next scene is in the typewriter clacking away room at the center where Arcady's overseeing it. And he's thinking of something, like, I got to shut this down. It's not worth it. Or the thought I think I might be trying to grasp is that he's trying to protect somebody. And maybe even that person is Nina or Oleg, because they seem to want to connect that statement by Stan that Nina and planting the bug and all that, and then this scene comes right after it, and it's a really brief little scene of the typewriters transcribing what the robot's hearing.
Huh.
I thought it made it seem like the robot heard that conversation between Stan and Adderholt. But I don't know. Maybe get a little further and it'll become more clear.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so Michelle Elizabeth meet Maurice in the park, and he's butting in again. He's got the transfer, the purse camera for the money. He's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be Lisa.
Yeah, I'm running this now.
And then he tries to play poker with Elizabeth. Maybe I'll just expose the film and give you the camera back that way.
She needed to kick his tail. I mean, I know she wants to murder him. You can see it in her eyes.
I would have loved to have her call him on that. Okay, fine. You can keep the camera. I'll keep the $5,000 in my purse here.
No, what she needed to do is tell him, oh, please don't, and then get just close enough to kick out, like, and just, like, kick his head off his shoulders. Just murder him right there.
Yeah, how much money do you think was in that purse? It looked like four or five bundles of those 20s, maybe $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
Small purse, and that was interesting that the purses matched. It was just the same purse.
I think they had to match because I think one of them was Lisa's actual purse and the other one was the camera because, you know, they would notice if she had a different purse at work.
Ah, great point.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, she pays him and gets the real purse camera and Maurice saunters off with a 1983 version of whatever. I'll talk to Lisa in person. Whatever. What a doofus, man.
He really is.
Did they say whatever back then? Did we say whatever like we do today like that?
I don't know.
We must have.
It was so funny. It was just so funny. And he's so horrible. That dude is so awful. I really think that even though, like, all the scenes that he's in are, like, really dramatic scenes, I think they wrote him in as comic relief, honestly.
It is comical. Yeah, well, it's working. It's comical. Yeah, Arcady, back at the center, Arcady's ending Zephyr, the robot deal. And Jamie, he's protecting something, man. Don't you think, Nina or Oleg? I know we don't have anything more than we did 5 minutes ago when we talked about this.
I don't know, because that didn't occur to me. Like, I didn't think about that. But I do want to mention this. Like, the thing about the pictures, you know, I think those are the pictures that they're waiting for. Like, the ones that Anton Baklanov.
Right. Needs. Yeah, the plane.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I don't know what's going on with Arcady. I think my take on that is that Arcady was just doing his do-gooder thing where he just really wants to be, you know, Johnny on the spot and make everything work right and, you know, do a good job for the, you know, for the center. And so he was trying to avoid wasting money because he feels like it was a misstep to bug the robot. But I thought that the whole point of the scene was that Oleg and Tat would have, like, some kind of intrigue together where they conspired to help Arcady and that whatever it is that they're coming up with is actually going to work out, and then they'll be more cohesive as a team. Like, they'll be, you know, relying on each other.
Maybe. I don't know. They made this came up three different times in this episode, this Arcady ending this Zephyr deal. So I think it's more, I mean, they're making it pretty prominently standing out, sticking out. So I don't know. All right, Philip and Elizabeth discuss Stan and Martha. This, you got to feel a little bit more sympathy for Martha here pretty soon because Elizabeth says Stan might be just looking for something else. He's single. And Philip disses Martha right to her, like, with Martha?
No, you know what? I took that a different way. Especially, like, okay, based on a couple of episodes ago where we realized he has feelings for her, I think for him that was denial. Like, no, no way, dude. No, I can't be into my Martha.
I think he was giving a little guy insight to Elizabeth. Like, with Martha, no, I don't think so. I mean, poor Martha, but still, she's not the most beautiful flower in the flower bed. All right, Paige walks in and has more photos, more of the photo drill with Paige here. Aunt Helen now, and this is all, like, is she really Aunt Helen? And Elizabeth muffles her, man, puts her hand over her mouth.
Well, she tries to. Yeah, but Paige isn't having any of it.
So that's two physical approaches on Paige that Elizabeth's done so far.
Well, Paige is kind of spinning out of control there.
Yep. Well, Paige leaves the room. Okay. Jamie, if this show really has some balls, Paige is going to get eaten by a lion in Kenya.
What?
While Elizabeth smiles. She's going to they're going to maybe take her to Kenya and take her maybe off to Russia and indoctrinate her into something in spy class or something.
Well, I mean, we get the whole thing later. We get the whole – we know what's going to happen.
Well, what do you think is going to happen?
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think that clearly Elizabeth has permission now to go to Russia, right?
Yeah.
And she wants to take Paige with her. And the center is interested in recruiting Paige. So I have a feeling that Paige is going to get left behind in Russia for a little training session.
Yeah, me too. Like, against her will.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, they have to do something with Paige. She's a huge loose end, and she's proven they've tried to say, look, you got to be careful with this, and you understand why, right? And she's like, yeah, right. And she keeps coming back and doing it more and accelerating it.
Yeah.
So something dramatic and drastic has to happen to Paige. All right, commercial break. We come back. Martha's pouring wine and waiting for Clark, and she calls her parents. This is the next nail in her coffin. Setting up a visit with the parents, and then the goodbye. This is the goodbye swan song. Goodbye, Mom and Dad. She's going to Belize. She's not going to be around.
What are you doing?
This is what they always do when they bump off. It's the Hank calling Marie, right?
No, it's not.
All right. Long live Martha. Philip meets with Paige now and tells her some truths and shows her some photos. So the more they let her in, that's their angles. Let her in more and more, and then she'll trust more and more. So Aunt Helen was the recovery time for Elizabeth. She really wasn't your Aunt Helen. And shows her some pictures of Henry's first day being born and camping on vacation with little brother Henry. And this is pretty manipulative of Philip, don't you think?
Oh, no, I didn't take it that way at all. Like, I took that as a parenting moment. I'm a parent. And like, that kind of stuff, like, where she is right now, Paige, is really having a hard time separating the lies of her reality from the truth of her reality. And she's feeling like everything is a lie. And so what happens is Philip goes in there and he says to her, not everything is a lie. And he gives her in her hand the things that are concrete, the things that are real. And yeah, I think that was a real important moment because it made a connection between Philip and Paige and what's real, and let her know that, you know, you don't need to spin out because there is some reality here.
Well, Paige kind of reinforces her loyalty by that camping trip. She says Henry told me he was afraid a bear was going to eat him, and Philip says, well, I never knew that, and Paige says, well, I promised not to tell.
Right.
So she's been a good secret keeper.
Right.
All right, we'll go over to the center again. Tatiana bringing Oleg kolaches from baked good from a new bakery.
Yeah.
You know what those are?
There's some sort of I think it's like a Polish pastry or something. Kolchakis, kolkachis, something like that.
Yeah, and he says, I used to get these in, I can't think of the, not Russia, but another place.
Stalingrad? No, not Stalingrad. I don't remember either.
Warsaw? Maybe Warsaw. Yeah. Anyway, different country, different city. And yeah. Tatiana makes the point that it's a mistake for Oleg to end Zephyr. We need to protect him.
Right.
So you're right. She's either going to really try to protect him for his own benefit or try to keep it going for something she wants to benefit from. Mm-hmm. Or the cause, the Soviet cause, needs to benefit from. But it's mysterious. It's a good little mystery because it's got me – it's bugging the crap out of me. Philip and Elizabeth talk in the car outside of the Abbasin Hotel now, and he tells her, you should visit Kenya. And then Philip goes in, cool as a cucumber, to pick up Zadran. Pretty cool. He's bored-looking and FBI-looking, and he looks tired, and he just looks like he plays his part so perfectly.
Yeah, he really did. It was such good acting. I loved it. Let me ask you, before we go into this scene, did we get to the part yet with the angel Gabriel and Claudia?
No.
Okay, we haven't gotten there yet. It just seemed to me like it was early in the episode, but I guess it wasn't.
No, it was pretty late.
All right. Okay, let's go.
So Philip goes in to pick up Zadron, and they check his clearance straight through to that Elizabeth phone line that they've set up with Elizabeth in the basement. She doesn't just say, yep, it's okay, it's him, right away. She just takes a minute and pauses, and that makes it really, really sound realistic.
Yep, and then she reads off a badge number, too.
But here, if they would have just snapped a picture, okay, every agent, we snap your picture. Sorry, buddy, take out the Polaroid, take his picture. Then just post his picture after everything goes south. They would have known, they would have caught the guy.
Yep.
But anyway, I still love this, how cool he was in this tense situation and the technology of the phone and all that. And really cool. I just loved it. So they take the guy with them, and they make all these cool points in their cool philosophy session with this Zadron guy. This is a really cool scene in the car with this Afghani Mujahideen fighter.
All right, so here we go. Here's the part where my secret skills come into play. I happen to know a little bit about the Arabic language, and I know some stuff about Islam. And I also know some stuff about, like, Afghani culture, and particularly the culture of the Mujahideen. All right, so that word, Mujahid, it comes from jihad, which is like holy warriors. You know, people know that word, jihad. Well, that's Mujahideen are like basically like God's army. Like that's the way that they consider themselves. And the speech that guy's giving, when he's talking about like the blood of the martyrs and saying that even the prophets have to be washed before they can be buried, but the martyrs can be buried exactly the way they died in the clothes and everything, that's actually true. Like that's real. And like the way that he spoke about it, I'm so impressed again with these writers, because the point of view that this dude had, that Abbasin, what's his name?
Abbasin Zadron.
Yeah, I had it right. Okay. Abbasin. When the point of view that he was speaking from was such an authentic voice for somebody who is an absolute lunatic, murderous thug who's brainwashed, you know, in his religion. I mean, it's really, and it was fascinating to me, like knowing the real, like the way that it was written, for somebody who understands language and who knows a little bit about that history there, it's really easy to see that this guy he's a lunatic. Like he's a fanatic. He's not like a real adherent, and he's a thug. And the way that he bragged about, like, you know, killing people and murdering them and doing all this awful stuff, it was such a clear indication of the kind of brainwashing that actually happens in that part of the world.
And yet, even though he may have been crazy, he was so passionate about it that it was almost making me passionate. Like, yeah, go, dude, protect your country. And I had to remind myself, like, wait a minute, I'm American. You know, I should be like on the other side of this. But he believed it so much that I wanted to believe it. Like it was a rah rah speech almost, right?
It really was. Like, he was so convinced. And that, you know, that's the thing that's so genius about this writing. I mean, like, what Philip and Elizabeth were doing was, like, using his own fanatical beliefs to manipulate him into doing something stupid that he would never have done. It was completely against his own interest. That, what he did, you would never have been able to get this dude to do this any other way.
Yeah, so let's lay out this plan. Let's outline this plan, because there's a couple things going on.
All right.
Philip and Elizabeth, who are Russians, want to derail the U.S. from giving these Afghani guys the Stinger missiles to shoot down the Russian helicopters. Mm-hmm. Right? So they want to make this guy, while he's in this meeting, and his two partners, they want to make them all look sort of crazy so that the U.S. just says, screw it, we're not giving weapons to these crazy fanatics. So they have to make, so they make Zadran believe that they're American higher ups and that he has to eliminate his two partners or he won't get the missiles.
Right.
Because they're going to take the missiles and give them right over to the Russians because they're traitors. They're Afghani traitors mm-hmm. to you, Abazin. Right. So they have to convince him to do this. The men you travel with need to be eliminated. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's brilliant. You're right. It is brilliant.
It is. It is. And they use his own psyche against him. They use his own terrible mixed up thinking against him. And it's so, they do it so well because even like there's that moment where he's sitting there and he's just contemplative. Like he's just like looking out the window and saying, why is there no war here? And I was thinking like geopolitical location and all that stuff. But he was really like, he was sincere. Like he, you know, he was really pensive about it. Like, what the heck? Why is it my world? We don't have anything to offer, you know, in my country, but we're constantly at war. And he's really sad and upset about it, but he's so indoctrinated and he's so misguided, you know, by his own fanatical beliefs that he doesn't see any logic and he's not even thinking. He just reacts.
I love this philosophy, though. Like, you're right. Why is there no war in America? You have riches left and right. And the riches he identifies are, you have planes and helicopters and medicine, like all the things he wishes he had. He sees all over America, but nobody's fighting for them. And yet Afghanistan has nothing, and it's constantly at war. Right. But it was just really cool how he identified what he thought as really, really rich riches, planes, helicopters, medicine. You know, yeah. nothing to speak of, like great food and wine and art and colleges and freedom. It's just the stuff he treasures, right?
Well, that's the thing, that part of the world that, you know, the problem with, you know, terrorists and terrorism and all that stuff is that these people are largely uneducated and they follow people who are educated and who are evil. And so you get masses of people to do horrible things when they don't really have a clue about the world. But, you know, Afghanistan, you're talking about a place where there's very little electricity, there's very little infrastructure, you know, and it was even worse back then. So it, you know, I mean, how's he going to know? How's he going to know?
And then the other layer, the added layer on top of all this is Philip and Elizabeth have to listen to him as he describes his loyalty to his cause, how he's cut the throats of many communists. He's just murdered them. They just go swimming after they've murdered my young boys and women in my country. And I cut their throats and, you know, he calls them cowards and cuts them open like goats. And they have to sit there and listen to this.
Yeah, that was awful. That was awful. And you know, and I'm sure that, you know, having to hear that made them feel a little bit better about sending him in there to murder his mates.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool scene. Pretty intense and very interesting. And I don't know. I just really liked it.
I really did, too.
All right. This is the commercial break. Then we come back to the Gabriel and Claudia scene. Gabriel and Claudia are clearly old friends. Maybe, do you think ever that they were more than friends?
I got the feeling.
Could be. They were they're pretty tight. They knew each other left and right, up and down, and they knew when to make fun of each other. They, you know, they're old soul friends. They just knew each other really well.
Yeah, like you and Michelle.
And they get into the restaurant with the 20 hamburger choices, and of course that's America, right? You don't need 20 hamburgers. We really don't need that many choices.
Right. And I loved it. And I was so happy to see Claudia. Because I love Margot Martindale.
Claudia says Philip will block the progress of this whole plot. And Gabriel says he might be right. And he says, I think he might be right. And Claudia says, think all you want. It's a free country. That's kind of a jab at America, right?
Oh, that whole scene was a jab at America.
Very derisive.
Even when it came down to the tea, and she's just like, just give me tea.
There's more tea choices, yeah. So even with that whole deal with Jared's family getting murdered and the whole thing going south, they still want to try it all over again.
Yeah, they believe the angel Gabriel can do it.
All right, so Zadron leaves his room to go speak with his pals, goes down the hall.
I must speak with my friends.
And now the first guy he comes to, the first Afghani guy, he was ready to go out on a one-second notice. Yeah. He just has like two knocks. Okay, let's go, T. Doesn't even have to put his clothing on or anything. He's like ready to go. They go to the third guy's room and slap, chop, hack. It's over. He does that murderous scene in less than 30 seconds.
Well, he's the cutter of throats.
Yep. Lets his knife do the talking.
Yep.
I don't know what's going to happen to him, but I think this effectively derails giving the Mujahideen the Stinger missiles.
You think?
If I was a general, I'd vote against it.
I might too.
All right. We come back to Arkady and Tatiana and Oleg now. And Arkady's made his decision. And Tatiana tries to intervene here again. She suggests make the mission appear to fail slowly. Don't just say, boom, it's over right away.
Right.
And Oleg backs up Tatiana. And he says, that's what my father did in the Department of Railways. That's the strategy.
Exactly.
Don't make it look like you made a mistake. Make it look like you tried something that just didn't work out over time.
Right, which makes you realize that people really like Arkady, because like even Nina with her using self was like really sad that she had made Arkady look bad and lied to him and, you know, and done all this stuff. And then here are these guys trying to save him. Like, I think he's a really good guy. He's like our version of Gad. He's like our Gad.
So Tatiana and Oleg here, they start to talk here about a conversation between a husband and or a man and a woman. They sounded like a husband and wife, but they talk about the king of comedy movie and how they should go see it. But they're probably not the husband and wife to each other. And Tatiana makes a point that as a woman, I recognize this is how people talk when they want to get to know each other better. Yeah. So it might be an in on these whoever these two people are, because they're kind of flirting with each other. Who do you think were these two people were?
I don't know. I don't think we know them, because the only people we know in that office are going to be like Adderholt and then Stan and Martha and Gad. I mean, and, you know, and then there's, you know, what's his name? Walter Taffet, who's like hanging about. But none of those people are really attached that we know of. So I don't think
it's got to be like Adderholt and Martha or Stan and Martha. It's not Gad and Martha. And I don't know of any other women that we know enough to connect that to. Maybe two unknowns that we don't even have, maybe not met yet in the show.
I assumed it was people we don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go to Paige's room. Elizabeth comes in and tells her of the idea to go to Kenya and then maybe to see her mother. And here's this seems ominous to me, taking Paige away from the U.S. to whatever is going to happen next. And we hear one of the coolest songs of the 80s, Jamie Ultravox's Vienna.
Yeah.
I really liked Ultravox.
Yeah, that was a cool song.
They were very cool in the beginning of MTV in the early 80s with Reap the Wild Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of about World War II fighter planes and just really cool music. I don't know that much about Ultravox other than I love the way they sound.
Yeah, I don't know them very well. I only know, like, you know me. Like, I don't know their music very well, but I know I like that song.
So we see Paige contemplating this idea to the strains of the song Vienna.
Yeah.
And then that music continues into the next scene as Hans awaits Clark and Martha. Vienna kind of fades out. Martha, oh my God, Martha's made plans now to leave for her parents' house. And this is where Clark shoots her in the head. No, sorry. He tries to talk to her in this miserable delayed plan, and Martha just sobs.
What?
Martha just starts to cry. She's such a sad sack.
I was so blown away by the scene, Mike. What are you talking about? How can you just skip over, like, the awesome parts of this scene?
All right, fill me in.
Well, isn't this the last scene?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Okay. So he's there and he's all like, you know, Martha, don't leave. Don't do this. I love you. And then she's like, no, but it's not enough. The 1/8 inch that you offered me and said, is this enough? It's not enough. And he's like, okay, we'll fix it. And he's like begging her. See, this was his way out. He could have let her go. And she would have gone, and he could have figured out a way to handle her later.
You can't let her go. She's going to go to her mom and say, Mom, God, you wouldn't believe it. I married this guy, but he's not who I think he is. He cannot let her go anywhere outside of his reach.
All right, but he loves her.
I think he cares for her. I don't know if it's love.
He said he loved her. He said he loved her, and I believe him.
To her, he said he loved her. Don't you know how guys work this stuff?
Dude, come on.
Oh, so, well, that's why I'm surprised. You're Sly Jamie, come on.
But seriously.
The whole thing, her mother's kept her room for. I told my mom to make it a sewing room, but she didn't. She kept it for me. It's so teed up to be such a tragic ending for Martha.
She's not going to die.
Well, Phil takes off his disguise. Well, okay, why did Phil take off his disguise?
Because he wants her to know the truth. He trusts her. He believes her. He wants to save her because he loves her.
All right, Jamie. This whole balance of secrecy and knowledge, being in on the knowledge, is tenuous, right? And Paige and Martha are the examples of this. They let them know enough, and they'll stay quiet, but they let them know too much, and then they have no choice but to go to the bad side, right?
All right, so
Paige is going to go to a bad side, and I think Martha too. They know too much.
If Martha survives the next episode, I win forever. You can never ever tell me that she's going to die again.
All right, we really should put out the bat call to the robot. I would really like to have the robot on the final episode.
All right, so but wait, because let me describe this scene, like the part where like he starts to take off his wig, because that blew my mind. I don't know how you didn't freak out on this scene. Like, he takes off his glasses and then he starts like messing with his hair, and I'm like, dude, if he pulls off his hair, it's over. And then he starts pulling out the hairpins, and then he's doing the whole thing, and then boom, the wig's off, and then it's just Philip.
I think it was pretty kind, because I think what he's doing is he's saying, Clark's not going to murder you. I'm the different guy who has to murder you.
Oh, God. Seriously?
No, but Clark, it's okay. You could have been in love. Because the funny thing was, he really did look quite different when he took that wig off, even though when we see Clark, it's like, hey, there's Philip in a wig.
Right.
But he really did look different.
You're right. He really did look very different. And it's so strange. I guess, I don't know. We're accustomed to seeing him in both ways, and we know it's him, so we just don't imagine. But he really did look different once he took everything off. But so here, I mean, this is the thing. I really think he's just going to tell her the truth. I don't know what the solution is, though, because I don't know where she goes. Because he tells her, like, earlier in the episode, he tells her, we might have to go away. Where are they going to go?
Yeah, it's just delaying the inevitable.
He has a family. It's not like they're going to be sister wives over there, Elizabeth. But that's what I think is going to happen. I think Elizabeth's going to be the one to put a bullet in Martha's head if somebody has to do it.
Well, to the strains of Vienna will fade out here. Jamie, we'll end 312. I am Abbasin Zadran. And the next episode is entitled March 8, 1983. So it's only 8 days after this. Remember, we saw MASH, so we knew this was February 28, 1983. So the whole plot of the season is going to end in 8 days. So whatever happens has to be in that scope.
Right. And that is the day that Ronald Reagan called Russia an evil empire.
Well, it's going to be a cool ending. That's all I can say. A lot has got to happen.
Yeah, okay, so here's I want to do some predictions. Let's do some predictions. Okay. You ready? Okay. All right, so I think Martha's going to live. I think that some kind of something unplanned and bad is going to happen with Paige. I think that Gad is done for. I think that that something's going to go down with Arcady. There's going to be some kind of discovery from that robot, something major from the robot. I think things are going to turn around for Anton a little bit because he'll get those photos. I don't know what's going to happen with Nina. And I think that's it.
I agree with everything except Martha. And I think Martha's going to, they're going to make it look like Martha planted the bug and then Martha's got like a suicide or something. So that'll take care of Martha. I think something will happen to Paige bad, but I don't think it'll happen in the final episode. I think it'll be an interesting cliffhanger for next year. I agree that there'll be something important with the robot, and I think Nina will have some positive. I think I'm hoping for Nina to have a positive resolution. That even if Anton Bakalnov cracks the code with these photos, that it doesn't just mean okay, Nina's useless now. We kill her off. I think they let her into something hopeful for her.
Well, I mean, she's supposed to get her freedom. If she can solve this problem, she's supposed to get her freedom.
Well, sometimes those Russians don't always do what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, they do kind of slide around.
So, all right, so that's it for 312. I am Abazin Zadran on the Americans on West Coast Project. Jamie, how do people reach you on the internet if they want to tweet to you?
At Ward Gurley.
And I am at Scathing Tweet. So we'll see you next week on March 8th, 1983.
See you then.
Bye, Jamie.
Bye. Alone in the night as the daylight brings a cool empty silence. The warmth of your hand and the cold gray sky, it fades to the distance. The warmth of your hand and the cold gray sky, it fades to the distance.